Time now for the College Football Inquirer with Dan Wetzel.
As an entity, you cannot miss on kids in your backyard that are capable of becoming a freshman All-American and crack the Michigan defensive line.
Russ Gellinger.
Well, we got Dr. Boudreaux here. He said he's good to go, you know? Yeah, you can play. Look, you said there's suspicion, yeah.
And SI's Pat Forty.
Without giving them a chance to get out, their classes have begun. Everybody else's classes have begun. It's disgraceful. Ray Anderson, I can't believe he still has a job today.
Here's Pat, Russ, and Dan.
Welcome to the pod. Week one is coming. We're going to spend the next hour talking about UMass quarterback Tyson Pumichon's Heisman campaign, though.
Yeah, we are.
The hero of week one. It's week zero.
UMass looked competent. I mean, they got some guys.
It's all transfers. We're not going to talk about UMass. We're going to talk about Notre Dame in a second. In general, though, I am starting to move my opinion on the transfer portal. After watching this weekend, and I'm looking forward to this, I have been net neutral on it. I've been very like, you know, all the coaches were saying it's the worst thing. It's the end of the world. College football is dead. All disasters, everything, right? And generally, these guys have been complaining every year about something for 100 years, and they're always wrong, particularly the ADs. And I was always like, it's not that big of a deal, whatever, it'll work. I'm now considering moving my opinion to it's a net positive for the entire operation. Because talent finds its level. I'm starting to think I was too
because
weak.
UMass is competent.
Not because UMass is competent. Because they're
took
not
the Minutemen.
They beat New Mexico State. But watching Sam Hartman, people can find their talent level. It's like water. It finds its level. And so you watch a team. You watch this kid, Tyson Pumichon. He gets recruited to Clemson. That doesn't work out. He goes to Georgia Tech. That doesn't work out. Now he's at UMass, and he's having fun. You know, so, and their team is elevated. We'll see. Long way to go on this. But I may have underestimated. I should have never. Always doubt when they all say something's horrible. They're never right. And I kind of gave them the benefit of the doubt that maybe it's not the best. But we're going to see. I'm not there all the way. Let's talk about this transfer, though. Because it looked pretty damn good for Notre Dame and Sam Hartman on Saturday. We're not going to do a whole lot of week zero talk. But Hartman, 19 of 23, 251, 4 touchdowns. Notre Dame just annihilates Navy in Dublin. Sam Hartman for Heisman. They're going to start calling him Sam Heisman or something out there pretty soon. Pat, your thoughts on the Irish looking as good as you can look? I know it's Navy, but that's how you're supposed to look against Navy if you're a really good team.
Yeah, exactly. Took care of business with extreme authority, I would say. Competence, hit on all cylinders, ran the ball, passed the ball. Hartman, 19 to 23 with at least one drop. So, I mean, he may have missed 3 passes. Total command of the offense, a new offense for him coming in. Made some plays off schedule, as you would say, where he's, you know, got to avoid a tackle, take his eyes off the field, move around, and then find somebody. I mean, it was the whole package. And look, I said on Twitter, and boy, people lost their minds, that, you know, coming into the season, I thought he was the best Notre Dame quarterback since Brady Quinn, and that might underestimate it. He might be the best since Joe Montana. That does take into account. That's a long time. That's
not a lot of contenders.
That's the thing. Not a lot of contenders. The only contenders in that time are Tony Rice and Rick Meyer. Tony Rice ran the option, ran it beautifully. They won a national championship. Rick Meyer was like the number 2 pick in the draft. Shouldn't have been. But Sam Hartman, I'll take what he's given Notre Dame. I think he really elevates the offense and gives him a chance to have a whole different dynamic.
And he also has a rib necklace.
Yes, he does.
There's a rib necklace to be factored into this. And everybody loves the, you know, the Heisman winner's got to have some kind of story, right? Like usually there's got to be something that you can market and sell besides football. And boy, they've got it there at Notre Dame with the rib, his own. What is it? It's his own rib, right?
His
own rib.
Unbelievable. His mom, he asked his mom to make him, save the rib. He saved the rib. They like cut it up and they made a necklace. It's really something.
Catholics like a good rib story, right? That's really part of the part of the genesis of the whole thing.
Adam, Eve,
pun intended.
Said, right. I wish I would have thought one, of it.
Yeah,
most famous rib since Adam.
McRib is back. Perfect. Somebody said
McRib.
Perfect.
It's a reminder of how important if you get a great quarterback, all sorts of problems get solved.
Yeah.
Right? Notre Dame's always like, well, we don't have all these game breakers. But when you get a quarterback, it's going to be really interesting now. My opinion of Notre Dame rose greatly on how – I knew Sam Hartman was good, but, I mean, that was – he's, what, 24 years old?
Yeah, he's ancient. Yeah. He might even be 25.
I mean, he's
I think I saw like, yeah, I think he is 25. I think I saw a tweet where I think he's 3 years older or 4 years older than like the youngest NFL starting quarterback. It's pretty amazing.
He's 24 speaking of starting for the record. 24.
Speaking of quarterbacks, I did pull up a list of all of the Notre Dame starting quarterbacks, and I'm just scanning through, and I'm like, surely Pat's not right. Joe Montana, I mean, come on. Well, Pat might be right. Maybe Joe Montana. Maybe he's the best since Joe Montana, especially pure passer, kind of gamer. You know, I feel like, Brady Quinn is probably the, the only one as far as gamer that could be up there. Although, of course, we're, one game down for him. So as we like to do during week zero, right? We're going to inflate everything.
Overreact. Yeah. It's always been amazing. Notre Dame couldn't get a great quarterback. I mean, like you would think that the ethos of the school would appeal to some quarterback over the last, I mean, it was Joe Theismann. He was before,
he was Montana. 1977, 78.
Montana. Theismann was like 69, 70.
I mean, those are like your two. You had these run of guys, but then since Montana, all those years, especially when it was really more pro stuff, I don't know, whatever. Let me tell you one other little bit on Notre Dame, and we'll move on to USC. These wide receivers, Jaden Greathouse, freshman, Deion Colsey looked pretty good. Jaden Thomas, all of them are like 6'1", 6'2". I think Colsey might be 6'5", 6'4 and a half. They've got some long athletes out there, and you've got a guy who can throw it. Now, these are not, they were good recruits, but they weren't five-star. But, man, they've got some length on the outside that are going to make them really hard to cover. Really challenging offense if you've got an elite quarterback like Sam Hartman.
Yeah, I was up there a couple of weeks ago, and the kind of the talk in preseason was, man, we need some of these receivers to come through. They look great. Do they catch the ball? Do they run the right routes? That sort of thing. And then they had a scrimmage when I was there, and everybody came out of there like, whoa, our offense all of a sudden has hit a different gear. And I think that's what we're seeing. Some of these young guys are starting to step forward at receiver who they had been waiting on, and now they've got some weapons there.
All right, reigning Heisman Trophy winner, Caleb Williams, 278, four touchdowns, no problems with him. USC defensive line, the defense in general, they defeat San Jose State, but what was 21-14 at half? They blew it open late. They got this incredible freshman, Zachariah Branch. Kid from Vegas, touchdown catch, incredible kickoff return. Looked like Reggie Bush out there. If you're a younger fan and you want to know why people love Reggie Bush, watch the Zachariah Branch touchdown kickoff return. That was it. But Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator, already under some fire for this poor defense. I don't know if I love their offensive line either. And I really just, look, we'll see. They got Caleb Williams. But is this team built for a Pac-12 grind from what you saw against San Jose State, let alone Pac-12 grind with Notre. Like, I'm going to look at Notre Dame and USC after 1 week and go, man, Notre Dame's going to kill them in the trenches. We'll see. Ross, thoughts on the Trojans?
Yeah, our Yahoo Sports picks just came out for the season, and every one of us, all five, picked USC to make the playoff.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure I feel super great about that after seeing the game, because it's exactly what we saw last year, and not only that, it's really exactly what we've seen from all of Lincoln Riley's teams, right? We've seen a offense that's explosive and a great quarterback, in a defense that is at best, you know, lackluster. The freshman, yeah, receiver was incredible. His kickoff return was pretty awesome to watch, and kind of like, I think it was at that point a 2-score game. It was 35-21 or something like that, or 28-14, and it was kind of a 2-touchdown game, and you felt like, wow, could this actually get pretty close? And he kind of broke it open. You mentioned the offensive line. You know, there's a lot of storylines to that game, and one of them was they rotated the offensive line completely. I think they took out like 3 or 4 and then put in a new 3 or 4 in different series. Obviously, they're trying to feel out the changing offensive line. I think they're going to end up, they lost like 3 starters, I think, from last year's team. So they're obviously trying to feel out a little bit of the O-line there. But the defense is something that I saw Bill Plaschke, the longtime columnist at LA Times, the headline of his column in Sunday's LA Times was, there's no defense for USC's defense. That's about right.
Yeah, I mean, that is the concern. That was the concern last year. It's really been the concern about Lincoln Riley teams since he was at Oklahoma, are they all gas and no brakes in terms of putting the brakes on the opponent and stopping anybody? They brought in a bunch of new guys defensively. That was supposed to help things, but they just don't look like an overly physical football team still at this point. And you have to be to win at the level USC wants to win. I mean, San Jose State, 7.3 yards per carry. That's like what Utah did to USC twice last year. It's what Tulane did to USC. 6 yards per play for San Jose. And I will say, San Jose is not a terrible program. They were 7-1 in 2020, and then they've been about .500 the last 2 years. You know, I mean, Brent has done a nice job making them something more than a 2-10 doormat. So you're not opening with a complete walkover opponent. But still, the one thing people wanted to see from USC, are you tougher in the trenches? We didn't see.
You know, we talked about this last year. I mean, Pat and I were at some Michigan game, and the kid they have, Mason Graham from Anaheim, Servite, freshman All-American defensive lineman. And he was sitting on, he had one Power 5 offer, Oregon State. He was a commit to Boise State. Michigan found him and offered him, and he flipped from Boise State to Michigan. And USC wasn't recruiting him. They didn't offer him. Nobody did. Oregon, this kid was kind of lost. If you're USC, and this kid goes in as a true freshman, and by October he's starting for Michigan. If you were USC, you cannot, and this isn't all Lincoln Riley, he just got there at that point, but as an entity, you cannot miss on kids in your backyard that are capable of becoming a freshman All-American and crack the Michigan defensive line.
Right.
Like, that's just an unbelievable miss. You didn't even, like, did they know about him? Like, how does Michigan see him and you don't?
Yeah.
Like, you can't miss on your backyard guys that are that good and then go, we don't have any defensive linemen. Well, you had one.
Yeah.
He was right down the road. And, you know, this is where it's funny because Harbaugh is not known as a great recruiter, but he finds guys like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, well, hey, you got, guess what? How many guys you want over him from if we were re-ranking? So I just look at the whole program, like, how, you know, that was a failure of the previous regime. They got it. But, you know, the way the transfer portal works, they should be able to get better defensive line play. And it's going to be this is going to be a roller coaster the whole year, if that's any indication going. All right. Just got a ton.
I wonder
to
if
get
the, Dan, I wonder if the way they play, though, really quickly, like, I wonder if the way they play offensively or something, or just historically impacts what, you know, like, I just think if I'm a defensive lineman in the way Michigan play, the way Michigan plays, I'd want to be a defensive lineman at Michigan, right, rather than USC. I just wonder how much that impacts things.
I give it that. If I was a lineman, I'm like, hey, I'm not going to have to be out here this quick. I don't know how hard they, like, I don't know. Like, are they hitting enough? Are they, you know, how do they practice? It's hard for me to be like, you guys aren't tough. You don't build, I mean, they're tougher than me. I'm not saying the USC football team isn't tough, but they got to get tougher because San Jose State is decent, but Utah, Washington, or, I mean, there's a lot coming. There's a lot coming. All right. ACC, Pac-12, the AAC, and Mountain West. Everyone's trying to poke in here on the on what's left of the Pac-12. The Big Four is our
the
song.
Remnants.
The Big Four song, I think I was unfair to. It wasn't actually that bad. I listened to it again.
I mean, when you can rhyme TJ Houshmandzadeh with anything, you deserve a little.
I did give it a second chance, and it was better. It was better. But we're not playing it again. not that good. Not this week. Too much this week. Ross, what's the latest with the Cal, Stanford, SMU to the ACC? I mean, that seems like the momentum is rolling. You might already, by the time you're hearing this, they could be there.
Yeah.
What's the latest?
Yeah, so I think that we were a little too late on the pod when my story dropped Wednesday night about the financial situation right now and how the finances break down. So there was a kind of a new financial model, and it's now been circulated to all the athletic directors and all the presidents in the ACC. Jim Phillips had his last meeting with presidents and ADs, small group of presidents Thursday morning, all the ADs on Thursday night, to circulate this financial model. And basically it breaks down, you know, the finances of adding these three teams. And I'll go through it as quickly as I can because it can get kind of complicated. But ESPN is required to give one tier one share to each of the new, any new team, basically any new expansion team. And a tier one share is worth $24 million. So that's three payments of $24 million every year. Now, SMU is not going to take a share for as many as 7 years. Cal and Stanford are going to take about 30% of that share, somewhere around $8 million each. That leaves you with roughly $55 million that's coming, new money coming to the ACC. And right now, I think what's happened the last few days is a discussion on how to split up that money, right? How to divide that money. I think a portion of it, maybe $10 million, maybe $20 million, will go to offset travel to completely out west in Dallas. And then you're left with, you know, anywhere from $30 to $40 million, right, to potentially put in a pool and distribute based on athletic success. That's what kind of the big dogs want. And three of the four big dogs, right, voted against this: Clemson, Florida State, and North Carolina. So I think that's where the discussion is how to distribute this money. What's the incentive pool like? There sure seems to be pretty big momentum in flipping one, two, or maybe as many as three of the four dissenters. All they need to flip is really one, right? So it seems like it's moving in the right direction. I would think by midweek this week, we'll have some kind of resolution and decision to this. But people have asked me lately, like, why the change? You know, it went, you know, they voted against it, the four, and then there was kind of dead and was quiet for a while. And I think the league office was basically amassing this financial model and working with Stanford and Cal to take less money, basically. You know, Stanford and Cal, I think at first it might have been 70% of the share they were going to take, 50%. Now it's down to 30%, right? And I think there's been some agreement to appease the big dogs by doing a financial model that doesn't evenly distribute the money, but does it through athletic success.
Yeah, it's been an interesting calculus, an interesting journey. This has been going on for several weeks now, but we are near conclusion. I do expect resolution here as Ross said, by Wednesday here, the early to middle part of this week. And, you know, if you're going to make me bet today, I think it's going to happen. I think they've gotten the numbers to the point where people on all sides of the equation are going to accept it. The great thing about this is going to be when Stanford, especially Stanford, but Stanford, Cal, and to a degree SMU come in, it's going to be, these are great academic institutions, and we welcome them into our conference. And all it was really about is, can we get enough money out of this or not?
And can nothing SMU, about the money, no.
Yeah, no. Can SMU come up with enough Dallas swinging you-know-whats to pay $200 million to float us for 6 or 7 years? You know, it's one of the most Dallas things I've ever seen, frankly. But I think it's going to happen. I think, and I wrote this a while back. On a lot of ways, this makes no sense. But in the context of what's going on, it does make sense. And it's the best move for all involved parties. I mean, Cal and Stanford don't have a lot of moves. This is the move that makes sense for them. The ACC, you are stuck in this contract that is driving your league crazy and is fomenting revolution, basically, from Florida State and to a lesser degree Clemson. Okay, you can pipe them down for a while and say, here's what we got, and this is your chance. You're good enough. Go earn this extra money. And you add some numbers and add a little bit more strength, maybe solidity there in case things start to break apart.
Amazing. The Dallas, so the boosters at SMU will just say, we don't need TV money. So the $24 million they would have gotten, which is still more than they're getting now, way more. Like, how much are they getting right now?
They're getting about $8 to $9 million right now, and so average
to a degree, they're only really giving up 8 or 9. Now they have to compete at the ACC level, and the budgets would probably need to get bigger and whatever, but instead
that's
of
where the donors come in.
7 years, $24 million, $168 million, I think. It's about that. Rather than say, let's build $168 million into football facilities and stadium and all that, we're going to buy our last shot. This is it.
Yeah.
This is the last life preserver. We got to grab it. I mean, look, there are no good options, so you take it. No good options for Cal and Stanford. And I think if you're Florida State and Clemson, I mean, here's your chance. Yeah, you're not going to get SEC Big Ten money, but you get a lot closer. How do you vote no?
Right.
You know, I think the people that the schools that may still vote no, if they do vote no, will be for other things that they want done. Like, for instance, the regular base TV money coming from ESPN right now is being like it is in most leagues, evenly distributed. And you guys remember in the spring, because of all the stuff that Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina raised, and the seven that tried to leave, all that stuff, they changed the revenue distribution model for the CFP and NCAA tournament money. They didn't change it for the main bulk of it, which is the TV money. And I think the schools who would vote against this, I think, are probably trying to get the league to change the bulk-based TV money as well. Maybe they're using this. So if it does fail or something, it would potentially be for that. But Pat, you know, brings up the question of, like, why do this and what value does it add outside of the money? And obviously, and he mentioned it, like, quantity, right, is the game right now. It feels like, I mean, the ACC or the Big Ten is going to be at 18, SEC and Big 12 are at 16. The ACC sitting there at 14, you know, 15 with Notre Dame. Like, it is kind of a it's not just a money grab, but it's a quantity grab, a team school grab. Just grab all you can and get up, you know, consolidate. And so I think that's one of the things somebody within the league told me was, you know, Jim Phillips doesn't want to be in the position that George Kolakoff is in right now, right, where you have teams leave, like Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina's, Miami's have been public and private about their wishes to potentially find a way out. If they do get out in some way and they pay an exit fee and whatever happens to the GOR, then you need other teams, right? You need numbers that the Pac-12 didn't have. And I think that's a big part of this as well.
All right. If we're down to the final two, what do Washington State, Oregon State do? There's this bit that the Pac-12 has money, Like there is an entity called the Pac-12 that has, I believe, 55 million in NCAA tournament revenue basketball coming. They have money in a bank. They have assets. They have, they'll run a championship game this year in Las Vegas. They'll make more NCAA. UCLA could make a Final Four and all that money. What do those two do and where do they go? And both the AAC and the Mountain West obviously are fighting for them.
Well, so their options are starting to dwindle quickly. Stanford and Cal, you know, if that thing is finalized with the ACC, then that kind of eliminates one of the options, I think, which was to rebuild the Pac-12, which we talked about here, grabbing some American teams, grabbing some Mountain West teams, rebuild the Pac-12, preserve those assets, right? That NCAA tournament money, anything to do with the Pac-12 network or what other assets they might have, and rebuild the Pac-12. That was kind of the sense, and maybe keep your A5 status with the NCAA. You probably would lose the Power Five with the CFP. You're almost certainly going to lose that. But you do preserve that. You do keep everything. That option, I can't imagine them rebuilding the Pac-12 with just Oregon State and Washington State. It would seem difficult. So the next option would be just join the Mountain West or do some merger with the Mountain West that preserves the Pac-12 brand and the assets in some way. Can you do that? And then, of course, there's American, right? And so the latest news we wrote about on Friday was that Gloria Navarez on Thursday was in Pullman and did a presentation to Washington State officials, kind of an expansion advisory committee that Kirk Schulz, the president there, has put together. And she did an expansion presentation. And then she did the same, I think, at Oregon State the next day. And Mike Oresko, the American, was supposed to do a virtual presentation maybe like today, maybe this week at some point earlier this week, making his presentation to the two schools. And then he was going to go visit there at some point at a later date as well. So you got both of them kind of swooping in. But Washington State and Oregon State, and I think Oregon State put out a statement about this, I believe, still want to be Power Five, right? They don't want to lose that status. I don't see how they keep that status. I don't know. I don't know what option. Maybe Pat has an answer, but I don't.
I don't have a good answer for them. No, I saw the statement, you know, and they put together a group with athletes and coaches and administrators and everything else. Like, what do we want? What does Oregon State want to be? And that's the answer. And that's like, I mean, I would also like to be a billionaire bass player, you know, I mean, that's not going to happen. So I don't know what they do. I think their option is to join the Mountain West, but then yes, the key, the $50 million hanging out there and who gets it and what happens to the Pac-12 name or brand or whatever is the key unknown here. And I'm not deep enough in the weeds on the financials to know how they can satisfy that. I would kind of feel better if at least Oregon State and Washington State got a lot of that money as like the survivors, you know, like you get a will and they're the beneficiaries in the Pac-12's last will and testament. At least give them most of the cash out of this thing and give them a chance to rebuild something. But it's pretty rough for them.
If they go to court, they should win. Everyone else is a bunch of quitters. Yeah. They're all quitters.
Well, according to the bylaws, and I think I can't remember who it was. I would love to credit him, but I forgot who it was. A Washington State or Oregon State beat writer did find the Pac-12 bylaws, and there's a section of dissolution on there. And it basically, you know, if you read that and other things in the bylaws, it says that the remaining members get to keep those assets, which I don't know. I was told it was like basically, you know, the NCAA tournament money is a rolling six-year whatever payment, and I think it's $10 to $15 million a year is the average. So I mean, that's a lot of money.
Yeah,
and they'll keep earning again this year. You'll be sitting there, right? You get your UCLA pom poms on every unit. Hey, they
UCLA,
quit
Arizona.
Yeah, they quit.
Well, they did, but here's the other thing: Oregon State and Washington State would have loved to quit if they could have had somewhere to go.
Yeah,
doesn't matter.
Everybody
they didn't
would love
quit.
To quit. Yeah,
they didn't quit.
That's right.
They didn't quit. They wanted to quit. No one wanted to quit with them. No one wanted them to quit. They get the money.
Yeah, we didn't want to go to the party anyway. We weren't invited. We didn't want to go anyway.
Mostly we're fine over here. My social life. Yeah. My social life. Never wanted to hang out with those people anyway.
We're all at the club. That's right. Dan didn't get an invitation to the club.
No. Never really.
I wanted to stay home with you, hon. I really didn't want to go out with the guys.
Yeah, the guys, the boys.
Funny how that works. Yeah. Funny how that works. Listen, it's a coping mechanism. We, you teach everything. And this is the problem. It's modern society because they got to look on Instagram now and see how much fun these other bunch of jerks are having, bathing in Big Ten money. Yeah, we didn't like that anyway. The trap. It'd be real hard to travel to West Lafayette. They don't even have a big airport. Huh? Who the hell wants to go there? Stupid drum. Not even that big.
Uh-oh.
Fly to Korea if you want to see a big.
Look out. Clear some space. He's on a roll with the drum.
Again with the drum.
All right. We'll be back right after this. Again, we got to pull through stuff. Arizona State. I don't understand this. Eve of the season. I understand it. But eve of the season, Arizona State informs the NCAA and the Pac-12 it will self-impose a bowl ban for the 2023 season because Herm Edwards considered the don't bring recruits in national ban during COVID to be just a mere suggestion to be ignored, and spent most of his time bringing recruits in during the COVID dead period, allegedly. Apparently, Arizona State agrees. So everyone else was trying to follow the rules, which, again, they agree upon, whatever you think of COVID. This was the agreed rule. They didn't follow it. They are now banning themselves from the upcoming season. Now, I don't know how good Arizona State was going to be under new coach Kenny Dillingham, but it is a kick in the shins, if not something else.
Probably higher. Yeah.
Probably higher. It's this team that's probably they're all excited. It's the start of the year. We got a new coach. Herm Edwards was a fraud of a college football coach. Nice guy, impressive speaker, but this was the dumbest violations ever. I mean, look, Harbaugh got three games for meeting with two dudes off campus. There's no gray area here. Don't bring recruits in during the dead period. And again, this has nothing to do with amateurism.
No.
In the NFL, you can't bring free agents in until you can bring free agents in. This is just not a thing. It's not, well, I'm going 5 miles over the speed limit. This is just stupid. And now these guys get their season yanked out from underneath them. Why not announce this when they still could have transferred?
Yeah, why not?
Mm-hmm. This is totally unfair to these guys. I mean, it's just no concern. This is so pathetic on every level. I guess some of these recruits knew what they were doing, but man, if a coach says come on in no matter what, you probably do it. Herm Edwards just completely fails everybody there. And now the people that hired Herm Edwards and then fired Herm Edwards are failing everybody there. And Arizona State's like, great, excited for the season. It would have been a big deal if they got 6-6.
Absolutely.
For Arizona State this year. I'm not in favor of this. If you're going to do it last spring and let the kids transfer, let your recruits know, all of that. Pat, I know you have thoughts.
I do. It's disgusting. The whole thing is disgusting, and this all goes back. It starts, you know, when Ray Anderson, former coach agent, athletic director at Arizona State, hires his former client, Herm Edwards, had been his client when he was an agent, and Herm was a coach, out of cold storage. Herm's hadn't coached in 8 years, has been on ESPN, hadn't worked on a college campus since the 1980s. And they bring him in at age 63 to be the Arizona State coach. So, like, what the hell right there? Then, do we think Herm knows anything about the rule book? Do we think Herm cares about the rule book? Do we think Herm's going to hire anybody who knows anything about the rule book? Hell no. So, brings in Antonio Pierce, former NFL linebacker, makes him director of recruiting, and they just start breaking every rule they can in terms of the impermissible visits. And
this is not an arcane moment of the year, the rule book, though.
No, it's not.
Did you hear we have a pandemic and people aren't allowed to, like, come on.
Yeah.
Had you heard anything about this?
I distinctly remember like the NCAA going out of its way in the spring of 2020 to say you can't bring recruits in. Anyone, period. Mm. We're shutting down.
I specifically remember the White House holding a press conference every day with Donald Trump, President Trump, saying, don't go anywhere. It was a fairly good public relations campaign. I believe we all got the message. Now, if you choose not to, whatever, but this is not a gray area.
No.
This is flat out,
gray area whatsoever.
F you, we're taking advantage of this.
Yeah.
And you're going to get fired.
Guys on their own staff got ticked off about it and turned them in. They had like this big dossier of documents.
We reported it. Pete was all over that. Yeah, right, there's video of the guys in the weight room taking the tour. Come on.
Yes, Yahoo reported it in June of 2021 or whatever.
Yeah.
And so
everyone's dropping down.
All right. Yeah. And so they're cold busted in June of 2021. What does Arizona State do? Not much. They put a couple coaches on leave. Herm Edwards, untouched, unscathed. Nope. Keep your job, Herm. Go for it. They get through the season, beat Arizona, win that territorial cup. Herm says, I'm coming back next year. It's like, wait a minute. Why do you get to come back? B, why is it your choice? Ray Anderson, AD, just in there. Yeah, well, we're rolling. We're going. I mean, they were cold busted, and they just said, we don't care. And so that might be why they get to a point where it's like, oh, my God, we're going to have to self-impose because they're going to crush us. The thing is, the amazing thing about this, obviously, for context, is the NCAA basically announced earlier this summer, we no longer want to give postseason bans. Tennessee could have gotten one in an earlier time, like a year ago. And then they're like, the membership is just not in favor of postseason bans. So either ASU stuff is so bad that there was no way they were going to avoid it, or they were just they didn't have the money to pay a big fine like Tennessee did. Because I did have some people say that, like Tennessee, $8 million, $9 million, no problem. This could be a bigger fine than that. Noodle. ASU doesn't. So, and either way, what it comes down to then is, yes, they make the decision. They kneecap this season. They kneecap their new coach who didn't know it was coming until the day it came. They handcuff the recruits to this season without giving them a chance to get out. Their classes have begun. Everybody else's classes have begun. It's disgraceful. Ray Anderson, I can't believe he still has a job today.
I don't know how to follow that.
The idea that they thought they'd get away with this, because what we were hearing at the time was, okay, you're a recruit, and you go, you and Arizona says, hey, come on over, let's tour the facility. So you go. And then you call one of the other schools that's recruiting you. You're on the phone with one of those guys. Hey, can we come down and see the facility? No, it's like the rule says it's a dead period that we can't bring you in. We can Zoom. We have AI. We have video. They fly drones through these things now. They're incredible. Well, Arizona State let us in. Wait, what? And you're right. How do you keep them? This was so clear cut. This is not. Gosh, the kids should deserve. I mean, I get the some entity called something like the NCAA will exist to run the calendar of the event. This was absolute terrible behavior by Herm Edwards. You're telling me the AD had no idea? No idea. Yeah.
Come on.
And now you take it out on these players. And then, oh, yeah, now we screw these kids. And then get like. There's no loyalty in the transfer portal. This is a total disaster. These kids just want to leave. You just screwed over your entire team.
Yep.
Line them up and spit in their face is what you just did. You said one of your precious 4 years, or by this point, 6 years, but whatever. No longer matters because we screwed up. We don't care about you. That's what they do when ADs and presidents do this to them. And if I am on the Arizona State team, or I'm Kenny Dillingham, sure he's got to hold his tongue or whatever, but I am irate at that. What the hell did you just... Wait, what? This is not a gray area. It looks like we might lose this one. You are going to lose. You have the videos of your own facility. There is video of guys walking through. You're going to lose. So terrible behavior by Arizona State. Absolutely Terrible.
Five days before the season opener.
Ain't nobody care about the players.
No. Sunday morning, 5 days before the opener, everybody comes in. Hey, a little team meeting here. Guess what? We're bull banned. Have a good practice, guys.
All right. You know, I think we'll do Dion on we're going to talk a lot more about who's, you know, week one plays. We'll save Dion for later in the week's show. We've talked a lot about Deion Sanders this year. I wanted to get to this one, though. LSU. I don't think we really got to a chance to really talk too much about LSU.
Yeah.
They're playing Florida State Sunday night, next Sunday night, the game of the week. And I think they're fifth, FSU's eighth. It was a really wild game last year. A lot of people thought that it was like two bad teams. They actually turned out to be two good teams.
Right.
Very good season for Brian Kelly's first year. Not good enough for years two through forever. But 10-4, beat Alabama, won the West. A lot of progress. Is this like, how important is this year? They've got Jaden Daniels. I have him as my Heisman pick, preseason Heisman pick. He's 68.6% completion rating last year, 17 TDs and three picks. He rushed for another 885 yards and 11 touchdowns. He caught a pass for a touchdown. If he improves this receiving core, Malik Nabers, Kyron Lacy, Brian Thomas, Mason Taylor, the big tight end, Brian Kelly, he loves that, getting the ball to that position. Harold Perkins on the D. The whole thing is there. What are LSU's reasonable expectations here? Is it national title or bust? Is it playoff or bust? What are your thoughts, Pat?
Oh, I mean, I expect them to win the West again. I think they can. I think they can beat Alabama. They got to do it in Tuscaloosa, but I really like their team. You named a lot of the offensive players there. They've got some creatures on defense. Harold Perkins is a monster at linebacker. Mekhi Wingo. I mean, and of course, Mason Smith, who I think we're going to talk about here, the defensive tackle. But I really like LSU's chances to be in the title mix basically all season and get another shot at Georgia in the SEC championship game down the road.
Yeah, I think anything short of reaching the SEC championship game this year would probably be a disappointment in a lot of people's minds in Baton Rouge. I spent a couple of days down there last week, and there's definitely excitement. It's funny because they got to the SEC championship game last year on a year when I think a lot of folks down there thought 6-6, you know, would have been a good year. And it looked like they were headed toward a 6-6 schedule during the first half of the year. And then something clicked. You know, Jane Daniels talked about it when I was down there last week with me, is the Tennessee game that they lost, right? Like, something clicked for him in the passing game with his receivers. And it just took off after that. I think they won like three or four straight after that, you know, and beat Alabama in that wild game. And then went to the championship game. And obviously run into a buzzsaw that is Georgia. So I think that anything below doing that again would be kind of disappointing last year. You know, they have the storyline right now going into this game. One of the storylines for LSU is obviously the absence of probably what they would call their best defensive player. You know, Mason Smith is going to be serving a one-game suspension against Florida State for an autograph signing it participated in 2 years ago, about a month before NIL legalized autograph signings. Spoke to Brian Kelly about it on Friday, and let's just say he's not happy, along with several others at LSU who at least early on explored the possibility of a legal avenue against the NCAA over this. I don't think that's going to happen, but let's just say that there are some fairly ticked off people down there about this situation with the suspension.
I would think. Now, they were thinking to get around this of moving the Grambling game to week zero. Is that true?
Yeah, that should tell you how much they think of Mason Smith, who was a freshman, all SEC freshman in 2021. And last year, of course, he played against Florida State in the season opener last year. And then during that game, you know, celebrated in a celebration of a tackle towards ACL and was out for the whole year. So he couldn't serve the penalty. So this dates back from, you know, I think it was late May 2021 is when this autograph signing was, like I said, about a month before NIL legalized it. And to give people an idea of how long some of this stuff takes, right? It didn't really become final until last fall. The ruling didn't become final because LSU appealed it multiple times. And he couldn't take the suspension last fall because you have to be medically cleared, eligible and medically cleared to serve your suspension.
Medically cleared.
He was not medically cleared. It was pretty
a quack, Dr. Quack down there. Yeah. Like, get Dr. Dre prescribe. I believe he's ready to play.
We got Dr. Boudreaux here. He said he's good to go, you know? Yeah, down you here. Can play. Look, you said there's suspicion. Yeah. Well, that didn't happen. So LSU, they ended up being in the bind. So I think over this offseason, knowing that he'd have to serve it against the next game, right? It's the immediate next game that he's medically cleared for would be the season opener, right? Well, let's see if we can get another season opener, and let's see if we can move that week two grambling game into week zero. And that should tell you how much they think of Mason Smith. Really good,
it just
talented player.
Means more.
Yes, it does.
It'll change the whole season.
So I think logistically,
scrambling an extra
didn't
half
work.
Grand, yeah. Half a million yeah. to move and stuff.
Right. Yeah.
Exactly. Oh, can't you? I can just hear the discussions. Like, okay, let's see. Is there? Can we have a scrimmage? No, that ain't gonna do. We got to play a real game. Grambling. They're poor. Can we just give them a little more money and they'll come do it? Okay, let's go.
Let's call Grambling. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's classic. And I'm
kind of
surprised
it didn't work. That plan didn't work.
Yeah. Right.
I'm actually.
Yeah. Logistically, I guess there are some hurdles there and they couldn't get it done. But you got to love Brian Kelly. He, I don't think any coach in America would have just kind of opened with that and blurted it out. But he really doesn't care. And sometimes he could be pretty brutally and bluntly honest. And I think also, the message LSU's trying to give also, you know, its fans in a way is, look, we tried everything, right? We looked at moving games. We appealed like two or three times. We tried everything to get this done and couldn't do it.
He's awesome. Mason Smith's from Houma, way down south there. They're getting near Marsh territory. Yes. Yeah, right. I'm surprised they couldn't find a doctor in Houma that would clear him to at least get out there for a play and say, look, he served his suspension.
I'm really disappointed with Louisiana doctors right now. I really feel that this is a total failure. Like you said, someone down there cut off somebody, doctor of something, who knows, Doc McGillicuddy, whatever you got to get. Could have Dr. Pepper. Just find a guy. Yeah. Well, maybe it doesn't mean more. Just means pretty much. Big game this weekend, Miami, Ohio versus Miami, Florida. And the chirping has already started. The Battle of Miami. Miami QB Brett Gabbert was asked, the real Miami is where? And he said, Oxford, Ohio. I looked up some stats here. Miami, Ohio was founded in 1809. Old school. State of Florida didn't even become a state until 1845. Miami, people lived at the mouth of the Miami River like for 2,000 years. So, you know, but their school didn't get founded until 1925.
Yep.
Obviously, one program has produced incredible, iconic teams, national titles, represent a world-renowned city. The other had Ben Roethlisberger, born and raised in the county of Dade, but the stadium's in Broward. So I don't know if that's better. The Miami, Ohio is a beautiful campus, classic quads and all that.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful, manicured, wonderful place. Miami, Florida has a huge pool and a lake and beach volleyball between their dorms. Also incredible campus. I don't know. Pat, your vote. Where is the real Miami? The real Miami is where?
Well, the real Miami is where the better football is. So I'm sorry to Oxford, Ohio, and the Miami. Are they the Red Hawks now? Is that the
Red Hawks? Yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah. And they produced like a ton of coaches. They're cradle of coaches. That's their big thing.
Sean McVay being the most recent.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they've got Bo Schembechler. Does Woody Hayes have ties there too? I think
Woody Hayes. Yeah.
Ara Parseghian, I believe. So on and so forth. Anyway, no, though. You can talk about coaches from the 1950s or 40s or whatever that were there. Let's talk about Ed Reed and all those guys at Miami that were winning national championships. So the real Miami is the U, and I'm pretty sure the U is going to win the Battle of Miami.
What about the 27-14 victory over in 2021, the victory over North Texas in the Frisco Football Classic? Does that not mean anything to you, Pat Forty? Does that not mean anything?
Not a lot. I'll try to conjure up a little more respect for the Red Hawks for that stirring victory. But like Miami, Chuck Martin's been the coach there for like 10 years, and every year they're like 5-7 to 7-5. I admire that.
Well, he took over, they were 0-12, so he's actually done pretty well.
That's true. Yeah. 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 So, but no.
Are we really having this discussion? Is this really happening?
What's the real Miami?
Come on.
All right. Tech, you can make a quick vote. Quick vote.
No, I mean, it's clearly the one that is stunningly beautiful, has gorgeous blue water, towering downtown, wonderful, awesome nightclubs, beautiful beaches. You know, come on.
Cuban food.
Bagel and deli in Oxford, Ohio.
Yes.
Good spot to get lunch. All right, Big 12 commish Brett Yormark was up at the Texas Tech Red Raider Club luncheon last week, and he was giving a little speech, and he turned to Tech coach Joey McGuire and said, "Coach, I'm not going to put any pressure on you, but I'm going to be in Austin for Thanksgiving, okay? And that'll be the Tech Texas game, and I believe that'll be Texas's last game in the Big 12." And then the quote continues, "And you better take care of business like you did right here in Lubbock last year." So the Big 12 commissioner is openly rooting for one member team to defeat another member team. Obviously, one of those teams is on the way out, Texas. Sensitive Longhorn. I think most reasonable Longhorn fans don't really care, but the sensitive types who are still offended by the horns down symbol are up in arms over this. Up in arms. And this will be seen when every call goes against the Longhorns during this season. This is proof that Yormark has a remember that guy playing chess and he had the beads. Yeah, the beads in a certain part of a certain body cavity. It'll be like that, and he'll be hitting the ref. He'll be hitting the ref. Morris coding the ref.
That's
pass
right.
Pass interference. Ross, should Brett Yormark have said what he said?
I don't know if it's a should or shouldn't have situation. I mean, I thought it was pretty hilarious. I think, you know, in one way you could look at it and say he pissed off one school and he made extraordinarily happy, 12 schools or whatever. So I think you could look at it from that vantage point. I saw where I think it was maybe a Texas fan. If people don't know listening, Texas is notorious for putting its visiting section at the very in visiting band, specifically the visiting band at the very top of the stadium, all the way up at the nosebleeds. And somebody took a picture of that, of the band, like a visiting band way, in a previous game sitting up there, and said, "This is going to be where we put Brett Yormark when he comes to that game here." So clearly they're upset. And I do think that they were upset enough to communicate their dislike, I guess you could say, to the Big 12 office. But I thought it was funny, and I think that Look, Brett Yormark was at a, I think it was a Texas Tech, like a basically a booster club event. And we all know that's when these things happen, whether it's coaches or administrators. Now, usually we don't hear about it. We don't hear it from commissioners. But Brett Yormark has proven to be a kind of different kind of commissioner. He's pretty brash. He's pretty aggressive. But these things tend to happen at these booster clubs where you want to like rile up everybody and stir up the crowd. And boy, that did it.
Poor, poor Texas. Somebody said something mean about Texas. It's the same as Dan said. This is the same as the horns down. It's not. You're being mean to us. Texas, which totally is abandoning the Big 12, which put the Big 12 on life support, but now doesn't think you should say something like, oh, I'd like to not see Texas win the Big 12 championship in its last year. I mean, come on. Sorry. Brett Yormark is a truth teller, and he told the truth there. Ross is absolutely right that that's the kind of like stir up the crowd sort of comment you make. But, and it does run counter to what Yormark said on the podium at Big 12 Media Days of, you know, we're going to celebrate Texas and Oklahoma on this year. You know, they've been important members here. We're going to wish them well on the way out, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, well. Then we get when push gets to shove and blocking gets to tackling, there is no doubt they do not want to see Texas or Oklahoma win this league. It will spawn every conspiracy theory every time a borderline call doesn't go their way. So what? This is the bed Texas and Oklahoma made. Lie in it.
I mean, even the most sober statesman loses his marbles when he goes to the passion of the Red Raider Club luncheon. Swept up in the emotion. He could have quoted, he could have done like that Carrie Underwood song, like slash a tire, slash put a hole in all four tires, take a Louisville slugger, all headlights. Yeah, I mean, you quit. You're the quitter. You quit.
Yeah.
The quitters get no rights. Sorry. Cry me a river. You're running off to like, I mean, you're, nobody made you. Feeling pretty good next year. I would not expect a lot of good calls. No, I think the refs will be fine. But.
Yeah,
you're sure as hell right. Yormark's going to root for the other teams.
Sure,
I see nothing. I see nothing problematic about it. All right, we got through most of stuff. We didn't get through it all, yeah. But we got most of it. I got one last story here. It's pretty important. Orange City, Florida. A monkey escaped. Uh-oh. I'm not sure where it's. They don't know.
It's pretty important, that's, he said. He said, it's pretty important.
It's a pretty important story. Well, if you lived in Orange City, Florida, and there was a monkey running around, you might be interested too, Ross.
That's true.
But half hour, it was my, I don't live there, but if I did, I'd be like, where's the monkey? Okay.
Tell us more about the monkey.
The monkey is loose. It's about half hour north of Orlando. Okay. The monkey is loose. The nearest zoo and nearest animal sanctuaries have not notified police they are missing an animal. This is according to Fox 8 Live. So the monkey is loose, and he's running around Orange City, but they think they're going to be able to catch him because he has gone to the local Popeyes.
Of course he did.
He's hanging out behind the Popeyes a lot.
Probably literally hanging, right?
Hanging. Kim Biabos, a shift manager at the Popeyes, since she was making preparations at the drive-through window and saw a corner of my eye, she sees the monkey. I'm like, this cannot be possible. But then she said, he's a smart monkey because he stopped right there. He looked over traffic. He knew not to go that way. And so basically the monkey has escaped from somewhere. He wants some Popeyes. Who wouldn't?
Yeah.
We talked earlier this year about those guys that broke out of the jail in Virginia and then got caught at IHOP. Went through the hassle of tunneling out of their jail only to go to IHOP. Pat, thoughts
Popeyes
on the monkey?
Much better choice, by the way. Popeyes is a much better choice.
I agree. I mean, But yeah, it seems like just keep running. The monkey probably doesn't know enough to really, like, it's going to get caught. So the Popeyes monkey, what do you think, Pat?
Well, I agree. This is an important story, and I will tell you why. Because the monkey has finally settled the argument. Popeyes versus Chick-fil-A versus everything else.
Oh, good point.
The chicken war is over. The monkey has settled it. The monkey could have gone to any of those restaurants if it wants chicken, chose Popeyes. You know, the monkey who is not susceptible to marketing, advertising, any of that sort of thing, just knows where the best chicken is, chose Popeyes. So Popeyes has officially won the chicken wars. The monkey decided it. Now, wow. I hope the monkey stays at large, does not get caught, and becomes big and fat and happy on Popeye's spicy chicken.
I got to see if there's a Chick-fil-A in Orange City, Florida.
It's got to be.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of Popeyes there. I don't know. Anywhere, well, see. I mean, Ross, your thoughts on the Popeyes, other than you don't think it's an important story when you're just wrong.
The monkey chose wisely. You know, Popeyes is phenomenal. Yeah, monkey chose wisely. Certainly smarter than the convicts who broke out and ended up at the, what was it?
IHOP. They went IHOP. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. I mean, moons over Miami. No, I don't think that's that. I don't know if they've got that. Do they have the moons over Miami?
Oh, no, that's Denny's, isn't it?
Denny's.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I would have gone to Denny's before IHOP, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. So I'm looking at the map here.
Maybe the monkey will show up at LSU Florida State Sunday.
There is a Chick-fil-A there. So and that's, but the, let's see, this place really nearby. Olive Garden is like kitty corner.
Mm. Mm.
Texas Roadhouse, Firehouse Subs, Arby's. Let's see what else we got. McDonald's, Burger King. There's a lot of options. Yeah. I think you could really market this. Starbucks. I mean, you could be like one out of one monkeys. Choose us over Taco Bell.
That should be on the marquee at that Popeyes.
One out of one monkeys choose Popeyes over all these other. All these other stores here on Enterprise Road. I don't know.
Destination location for monkeys.
Wawa's across the street. I think you get it's a basic trap, right? You just get a box with like the little stick and you put the original chicken sandwich right in there. And then right when the monkey goes in, you just pull that. Boom.
A box with a stick.
I think the monkey's Florida Wildlife ought to be able to get this done.
Monkey's too smart for that.
No,
don't be bringing your Boston solutions into Florida, man. Come on.
Well, they haven't caught them yet. At least I got a plan. Anyway, that's our show. We'll be back later in the week. We're going to preview week one. We got so much news. Coach Prime, so much good. This is so exciting. We're finally talking sort of football. Oh, there's a Publix liquor across the street. He may be over there getting boozed up. That's
Pub Sub.
Yeah. Yeah. That could be where he's at. Yeah. Moe's Southwest Grill is there. Applebee's. There's a lot. What a street.
He's got options.
What a street. Anyway, I'm back later in the week. Please subscribe. Tell your friends to listen. The season's not as good. It's still good, but it's not as good if you're not listening to this podcast. I mean, I think that one out of one monkeys would agree.
We'll even have a race for the case this week, will we not?
Race for the case. We did pick last week, but yeah, I went 2-2, I think.
Much like Jim Harbaugh and his recruiting visit, I have no recollection of making any picks last week.
No recollection.
I don't recall.
I'm Ray Anderson. You're banned from, I don't know what. Even the season. Good. Hey, guys, thanks for busting it during preseason conditioning. It's not hot or anything out here. Tempe. By the way, your season's completely freaking meaningless. Because I did a nepotism deal and hired my buddy. And then kept hiring. Leadership, baby. Leadership. All right. That's it. We'll talk to you later this week, and enjoy the build-up. Talk to you later.